You're listening to the Ideal Business Show with Pat Rigsby. This is the place where fitness entrepreneurs come to learn how to earn more income, have more impact, and enjoy more freedom. Now, here's your host, Pat Rigsby.
Hey everyone, Pat Rigsby here again with another episode of the Ideal Business Show. And today I am honored and excited to have my friend and co-founder of Precision Nutrition, John Berardi, here. My guess is you already are very well aware of who John is and the impact that PN has in the fitness industry and really in health and wellness, you know, on a much grander scale than just with fitness professionals or personal trainers or gyms. But, you know, John is, you know, really kind of an industry icon. I mean, anything that you could probably say about somebody from, you know, being a prominent speaker or, you know, a tremendous writer, you know, he's built a great business that's got, you know, a couple different components to it that we'll dig into in a little bit. But really, one of the things that I think is most interesting and definitely one of the things that makes me admire John and his accomplishments the most is the fact that he's been able to build this powerhouse organization really kind of on his terms. So, you know, with that, welcome, John.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks so much for the great introduction. And thanks for having me on the podcast. And thanks to everyone who's tuning in right now. I really appreciate you guys being here. Yeah, I hope some of the things we talk about are interesting and exciting to you, or at least as interesting and exciting as they are to us. And you can take away a few nuggets from this conversation and either apply it to your life or to your business or something like that. So thanks, Pat.
Awesome. So, you know, I know there are so many things that we could talk about, but I think one of the things that I've enjoyed most when I've had the opportunity to interview people is, you know, the fact that people see the success that PN has now, they see the impact you're having, but a lot of times they don't necessarily know the backstory. They don't know how PN kind of came into existence. So would you mind spending a few minutes on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I guess the early days of PN, it wasn't much of a business. It actually wasn't even called Precision Nutrition back then. I've sort of got my start, my industry, quote unquote, start when I was a master's student. And this was, I don't know, do you call it the turn of the century when it went from the 1900s to 2000s? So it makes us sound old, Pat. So at the turn of the century, I think it was 1999, I published my first article online with what was called Testosterone Magazine back then. You know, I was a master's student. I was studying exercise science. I went on to do a PhD in exercise and nutritional biochemistry. I was just so excited about the things that I was learning in the exercise and nutrition realm. And the internet seemed like a really tremendous way to kind of share those things. You know, people say that, you know, to really understand a subject, not only do you have to learn it, but then you go out and teach it. And so it was like the ultimate platform for me to do that. I was learning this great stuff. I used to have one day a week where I would just spend in the stacks at the library. And for those of you who are younger, you might not know what such a thing is, but you know, you basically had these sections of academic institutions in the libraries where there would just be all the research journals in printed form. There was nothing really online at the time. So I would just sit in there and I would go through, you know, Journal of Applied Physiology and all these other journals and look for interesting things and I would write about them. And so, you know, I had this vehicle for that with Testosterone Magazine. Then, I mean, I built up a pretty interesting following doing just that. There was no business at the time. I was just getting paid to write articles. And I started to get invited to speak at events, and I did my first, and it was my largest ever conference at Swiss, and I think that was like 2004 or something like that. And up until that point, I had been doing speakings, but they were to small audiences, 20, 30, 50 people. And so I got invited to Swiss, and I was really honored, and I think Lee Haney, the legendary bodybuilder, was speaking there, and Kazmaier, legendary strongman, like all these people. And I was just like blown away. And then I get there and the audience is like 500 people. It totally freaked me out. But After the event, a young guy came up to me named Phil Caravaggio. He was just interested in the field because he was interested in working out, but his whole, you know, experience and training was in something called systems design engineering. So he was basically building web interfaces and applications for companies like IBM and stuff like that. He was also a student at the time. And so we met, we really hit it off. And he, for the next, I don't know, year and a half, tried to convince me to build a website. Now, at the time, there were no expert websites. I mean, there were very few websites at all. Most of it was like the equivalent of like a chat room, you know? And I wasn't that into it because still at the time, you know, I was on dial-up. So I'm like, who's going to spend all their time on the internet? Just loading a basic HTML page took 5-10 minutes. I just wasn't that into it. And he kept working me. And, you know, I kept telling him it's never going to work. And this is the true visionary that I am, right? And he finally twisted my arm enough and we built our first website. It was called ScienceLink. It was at johnberardi.com. We built it, like, again, we were students and I was, you know, I was getting paid to write for testosterone. And we took Fridays and Saturdays. So Phil lived in Toronto and I lived in London, Ontario. And he came down every Friday afternoon and we would go into the basement of this house I was renting. We set up like a little makeshift office and we would code the site. Like, he taught me how to code and, you know, we learned how to build checkout processes and, you know, email list management tools and stuff like that, which was really primitive compared to what there is now. But that was the early beginnings. You know, we spent a few months just building the site and we were just putting free articles up there. There was no business model. And we just put this little thing in the right corner, which was kind of common at the time. You just say, oh, interested in the latest updates from Dr. Berardi and ScienceLink? Give us your name and email address and we'll send you our newsletter, right? And that actually used to work. Like, people would sign up for that. So after a couple of years of doing this, and we were making virtually no money. We had a little one-on-one coaching thing that was, I guess, keeping the site, the lights on or whatever. But yeah, I mean, we were just writing, engaging our passion, I guess you want to call it, and collecting names. And then when we were graduating, you know, we were getting these lucrative job offers, which was awesome for big companies. You know, we were debating, like, what should we do with the site, whatever. And we had a friend who knew a little bit about business. And he was like, guys, how many people do you have on that newsletter list of yours? And we're like, nah, it's like 30,000 or something like that. And he was like, okay, don't take jobs. You guys have, that's actually a business. You know, if you start doing information products and coaching services and stuff like that, a 30,000 list is huge. You guys will do really, really well. So we decided to put our energy into that. You know, in the beginning, it was just more of what kind of prompted me to start in the first place, which was, what am I interested in? What does it seem like other people are interested in? And where does that overlap? And let's just do that. So we started with a cookbook. It was called Gourmet Nutrition, and it was an ebook back in the day. And so it was healthy nutrition recipes for people who are in the gym and like to work out and athletes and stuff like that. And then we did another information product. It was a DVD. It was called No Nonsense Nutrition. You know, we filmed it in a variety of locations. We filmed it in a commercial cooking kitchen and we taught people how to prepare quick and easy meals. Then we took them on a grocery tour. Then we took them to the high performance physiology lab that I worked at the time as a graduate student. And we just created this really cool kind of DVD set. And again, it looks kind of goofy now because video technology has changed so much. But back then, it was a pretty good product. And really, we were just sharing the things that we were learning with people out there to help them, you know, eat, move, and live better. And then we kind of grew with that, you know, as we saw the information product business changing. And, you know, we felt like, generally in fitness, the products were mediocre. You know, we wondered if there was a way to help more people on a larger scale. And then that sort of led us to, you know, the modern day version of precision nutrition coaching, which is, you know, a service that we provide now that we've coached like 45,000 people over the last 10 years. And then that led to our fitness professional stuff where, you know, after coaching so many people and having such great results in this kind of scalable and automated systematic way, fitness pros started asking us and health pros and nutrition pros, how can I use this kind of a model? And then that's where the certification came from. And so, you know, really it was, you know, this kind of slow evolution of our interests and how they dovetail with, you know, the audience or our prospects or whatever you want to call people's interests. and then just trying to do good work every single day to bring them stuff that they can use, either themselves to change their lives or to use with their clients. So that's kind of the genesis story in a nutshell.
Well, I mean, you know, I had the good fortune to listen to you talk about some of this, you know, at that 212 event where you were a mentor, and it was incredible to me just to think back. And I mean, it definitely was kind of a turn back the clock experience for me, remembering some of those old sites and stuff. So, I mean, you guys have definitely evolved quite a bit. I mean, there, you know, I think there have been, you know, improvements and, you know, something of an evolution with, you know, the way that you coach, obviously the, you know, the certification and now pro coach. I mean, can you talk a little bit about kind of what PN embodies today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Today, basically PN does three things. One is we coach clients to help them eat, move, live better, change their bodies, and change their lives. So that's the one arm of our business. And the reason I'll bring up all three is because they play really nicely together. The second is, you know, we work with fitness professionals, a lot of them. In fact, we've enrolled over 35,000 health and fitness professionals in our certification program, our level one, to teach them how we do that coaching. And I think PN's in a pretty unique position. I mean, we're one of the only certification groups that actually coaches. You know, a lot of certification organizations, as good or as bad as they might be, and there's the whole spectrum, don't actually, you know, for profit coach people. And I think it's unique that we do because, you know, there's obviously the theory of coaching and the theory of nutrition and the theory of personal training. And then there's the reality of having to get clients and having to kill what you eat. Do your methods actually work when they're tested with real people, thousands of them in real life? So that's what we teach in our certification. You know, level one is basically, you know, a textbook driven with online lectures and modules and online quizzes and stuff like that course, where you can learn the fundamentals, not only of nutritional physiology, but of coaching psychology. And so people have, I mean, this, our level one program, I'm so proud of because it's so universally regarded. When we ask our students to rate it, you know, our average rating is like 9.9 out of 10, which is kind of unheard of. That's one part of our certification arm. And then the other part is our level two certification, which is an actual year-long mentorship where we take much smaller groups of coaches who really want to get to the next level in their coaching. And we actually provide them with a coach from Precision Nutrition. Like one of our super coaches actually mentors them for a year. And there's lessons and there's assignments and there's quizzes and there's case studies. And people emerge from level two just fundamentally changed. And that actually speaks to what I think is our philosophy at PN, which is that traditionally, personal trainers, nutritionists, health coaches are taught through an academic curriculum. Even a lot of online coaching for clients, aside from like when someone hands them a diet or a workout to follow, is very academic. It's frontal cortex. It's thinky brain oriented. Learn about, you know, muscle hypertrophy. Learn about glycemic index. And we know very, very well from psychological literature that people generally don't change from frontal cortex oriented learnings. It comes from deeper brain centers that regulate emotion and fear and habit. So what we try and do at PN is we try and actually work on those centers. And the way we do that is through strategic practice. So the idea being, you know, Pat, you know, if you wanted to get in better shape, quote unquote, you actually don't want to learn how to get in better shape. You just want to be in better shape. And I think they're two fundamentally different processes. Very much like I think if a fitness professional comes to Precision Nutrition and says, I want to be a better nutrition coach. They don't want to learn to be a better nutrition coach because that's all thinky brain stuff. That's college. They want to be, embody being a better coach. And so I think there's totally different practices and coaching tools for that. And that's what we've become really good at. You know, I'll give you an example of how I think about this. You know, when you say take a goal, okay, the goal might be to lose weight or it might be to be a better nutrition coach. I just don't think setting goals helps people achieve goals. What I think has to happen is you have to look at that goal and you have to ask, what skills do I need to develop to achieve that goal? Because if I don't have the goal now, it means I probably don't have certain skills that would be required to get it. So what are those skills? Well, then we break it down into those skills. And then you ask, okay, well, skills aren't developed by just wanting to have skills. Skills are developed by daily practice of particular things, habits or practices. So then we break the skills down into practices. And we even have a worksheet on our website where we have people fill this in, like, what is your goal? What are the skills that are required to achieve that goal? And you lay those out over a timeline. And then you say, what practices do you have to follow for 1 or 2 weeks under each skill to build that skill? And I think what you're doing is you're applying like a systems design kind of thinking to the accomplishment of goals. And for me, this is the only reliable way I've seen people achieve their goals in a way that helps them become the kind of person they want to become. So really, you know, when you think about how we coach clients, which is the one arm of our business, it's a practice-based program. Every day we ask you to practice a thing, and we ask you to do that for 2 weeks. And then after those 2 weeks, you practice a new thing. And then during that time, we give you lessons and assignments that sort of deepen your experience related to that practice. So if this week's practice is sort of eat more fruits and vegetables, for example, every lesson or assignment that we give you or piece of reading relates to how you can do that. We don't go off topic and talk about workout nutrition, and we don't start breaking down how much vitamin A is in a vegetable. We talk about practical things that you, how do you prepare vegetables? How do you eat vegetables in a different way if you never like them in your life and that kind of a thing. And if you're a fitness professional, it's the same thing. The skills are just different. Like, you might need to develop the skill of active listening. So rather than trying to be an expert all the time and tell people what you know, to actually listen so you can actually create a client-centered approach. So how do you actively listen? Well, then we have 2 weeks of lessons and assignments that help you practice active listening. And then when you stack active listening on top of the other skills, you actually, over time, slowly, surely, strategically, become that kind of a coach that you want to be. And so level two really embodies that, and you have a mentor the whole way. And then you brought up the idea of pro coach. And Pro Coach is our most recent offering. So for years, we had coaching clients, and then we had teaching professionals how to do it. But then we, through our coaching program, we've coached so many people, and we have software, and we have this really cool online platform to do it. And Pro's Row was like, well, this is great. We learned your methodology, but man, I would really love to use your stuff. And we didn't have a way to do that. So in June of this year, 2016, we actually for the first time ever, made available the coaching platform that we use with our coaches and our own clients to fitness pros who've been through our certification process. That has been awesome, totally awesome. So what happens is, if you've been through our training, you know our methodology, you can now add your clients to the platform with you as the coach. So you become the superstar coach using our tool. It's kind of like a software as a service model. And why I'm so excited about it is, so to date at Precision Nutrition, you know, we've coached in 10 years about 45,000 clients. Since June, when we offered Pro Coach, we've doubled that. So our coaches have gone out into the world and invited another 45,000 people to coach with this model, with them as the coach. And I think that's just incredible. It's taken us 10 years to coach 45,000 people and like 2.5 months to coach another 45,000. So, you know, that's just incredible to me that now we can actually, at PN, work with the professionals that, you know, represent us and themselves out in the world to reach way more people than we ever could have. And, you know, we expect to reach 1 million people through this new arm of Pro Coach. And, you know, the cool part is that our professionals just pay us a small monthly fee to use the software. They're really at the center of this process, you know, so it's really kind of a win-win, which, you know, people use that phrase a lot, but it really is. I mean, at us, we get to help more people at PN. And for the professionals, they actually get to use this tool that helps them automate and scale and, you know, really deliver the kind of results they always wanted to deliver, but never really had the tools to do it. So as you can, I'm getting a little bit excited here, but you can tell, like, I'm super pumped about how these three things come together. And we kind of think of them as like a, almost like the reduce, reuse, recycle wheel. You know, ours is like, we coach so that we can learn how to coach better. And then we put that, and then we teach that to our professionals. And then we learn from what they're doing through the platform. And then we build that back in to our coaching. So it's like coach, learn, teach, learn, coach. And it just goes around this spiral of just getting better all the time. So that's one of the things I love about the things that sometimes feel a little bit divergent in our business. You know, sometimes business people come in and say, yeah, but you coach and you're, what kind of company are you? You got coaching, you got fitness professional stuff. We don't get it. And the answer is, okay, I understand how it feels like two separate businesses, but for us, it just works together towards the goal we're trying to achieve, which is really improve the way that people in the industry deliver nutrition and fitness coaching. So it makes total sense to us.
Well, I mean, I think it's brilliant. I think that, I mean, it's both simple on the surface, because instead of trying to do 100 different things, you guys are world class at three. But obviously, once you kind of pull back the layers, there's so much that goes into it, the depth, the complexity, the, you know, the quality. And I mean, it's no wonder that it's grown like it has and like it's poised to grow. So, you know, so there's kind of a big gap there, right? From the Science Link days to now. Were there some things that maybe you kind of learned along the way that you feel like accelerated the progress, that maybe, you know, allowed you to move a little faster, have a little more success? Anything that you can share kind of on that theme?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things is, you know, it's really easy to see someone like me, for example, because I'm out in front of the company, like I'm the spokesperson, if you will, and be like, oh, look at all the things that Berardi does, right? And then people younger in their business than we are will try and compare where they are to where we are. And I think it's not fair, and I want to let people off the hook a little bit, you know? In the early days when we were just scrapping together some information products, there were like two or three of us. You know, now we have about 100 people. That's 100, you know, well-vetted, talented people who are all contributing to building things that there's no way two or three people could build. You know, so how did this evolution kind of happen? Well, you know, it happened with money. You know what I mean? We started selling products. We built our first products, and while they kind of pale in comparison to what they are today, they were good. They were good enough. You know, they were good at the time and they helped people. So we started making profit. This has been kind of, and then we invest all that profit back into the business. You know, both Phil and I live well below our means, and that money goes into the business so we can hire talented people and build better things. So that's such a key part of what we've learned along the way, which is, you know, this idea of sort of, I guess, living lean outside of the company so that we can continue to do incredible work inside the company. And, you know, doing that incredible work is contingent generally on having some money. For us, that money, though, it's been our goal to always self-generate that money. You know, I mean, there's a lot of discussion in, you know, the startup world about, you know, getting investors and having rounds of financing and stuff like that. And, you know, admittedly, I'm really dumb about that world because I've never entered it. I see lots of conversation about it, and there's a lot of actual, I don't know, elevation of that kind of discussion in business magazines and stuff like that. But I've never really gotten it. I've always felt like, I don't know, if you build stuff that people will want, then you'll make profit and then you'll be able to invest that back in the business to grow it to the next stage. They call it bootstrapping or whatever. And so I've never quite got it, or maybe it's just not in my constitution to go out and say, hey, I'm going to find investors to give me $1 million to build something that I'm not going to sell until I spent all the $1 million. And that's when I'll find out if people actually like it or not. Or I'll do beta testing along the way to see if people like it. But to me, beta testing has always been, I don't know, the risk of offending anyone, like wimpy. You know, it's like there's a not all-in-ness to it, you know, where people are just like, well, I'll try it out. It doesn't matter that much because we're only going to show it to 15 people and get their feedback. That always feels wimpy to me. It feels a lot like split testing in marketing. Bit of a side tangent, but, you know, for years at PN, you know, we never did like subject line split testing or email split testing or anything like that. And people are always like, you guys are so dumb. You know, why aren't you actually doing this? And My answer was, one, we're focusing on the most important things that I think are going to make a much bigger difference to our business than that. And then the second thing is, I've noticed this trend where when people start doing split testing, they put far less energy into the quality of the material that they're testing. So, you know, if you have only one chance to write an email that converts, you'll probably spend more time on that than if in getting it right than if you were to just be like, well, who knows? Let's just test these three. What I find is you end up testing C-level ideas against each other, you know, and maybe one is a B+, and you find out one's a B+. And for me, I'm like, oh, I just want to test A ideas against each other and see which one is the A+. And I feel like it's such a difficult thing when you're not all in on a message or a business or whatever. So it's a bit of a tangent, but it's generally how I look at a lot of things. Like, I want us to do the most incredible possible work that we can do. Let's go all in on it. And we may find that it still needs to be made better through user feedback and customer feedback and stuff like that. But the opposite is the kiss of death to me, which is putting out like C or D level stuff as your first try and being like, no, the market will sort that out. Yeah, they'll sort it out by not buying it and then you're going to go bankrupt. That's how they sort it out. I think you have to sort it out internally first. So these are some of the things that I've found kind of interesting over the years as we've gone from basically 2 people to like 100 people, you know, just, you know, putting out stuff that can make you profitable. Good stuff that can make you profitable, that customers will actually want, so you can fund the next generation of better stuff. And then two, just being surrounded by really great people, you know, having a lot of talent around you. If you're just at the beginning, both of these things seem hard to do, but they're not, because we did them too. We did the best that we could at the time. You know, once we built something that we thought was great, then we told everyone about it. And then in our case, most of the time they liked it. And then we made money, and then we could invest in more people and more quality until, you know, slowly but surely we chip away at it and we're where we are today.
You know, that kind of dovetails in with something our mutual friend Scott Prohaska told me. He said he had come to you at one point saying, hey, here, you know, here's a really good opportunity or something like that for you. And you're like, I'm good. I have kind of my focus for the year, and this is what we're going to do. And it seems like it's just very much in alignment with, you know, this just committing to do great work and not being pulled in different directions by the kind of, I guess, as it's called, the shiny object syndrome.
Yeah, I have this kind of a philosophy that not everyone shares, and I even have to keep myself true to it because sometimes I find myself straying. But I guess the best way to describe it is, let's say I have 100 units of energy that, you know, it's my maximum. It's like 100%, 100 units of energy that I could spend in a given week. Now, I might spend some of those on work, some of those on time with my family, some of those on my own health and fitness, but I only get 100, right? At the beginning of each week, each Monday, I sit down and I look at how I'm going to spend those 100 units over the course of that week. And I generally only commit 60 units on any given week. So what does that mean? Well, I'm not looking for every hole in my calendar to fill. I'm not looking to add an extra project this week if it feels like I'm not going to be busy enough. I'm actually looking to pare it down. Like, in a given week, I want to commit to doing fewer things than even I think are possible. So I want to operate at 60% of my capacity on any given week. So why do I do that? Well, I do it because I know it's not true. Like, stuff is going to come up in every week. You know, I've got 3 little kids, another one on the way. Right now we're renovating a house. You know, real life impinges on your plans, you know? So I know if I commit to 60%, then I'm going to get to 100 through just various things that come up in a week. But doing the exercise of committing to 60% forces me to pick the biggest impact things at any point in time. And I don't just mean this for my business. I mean it for my relationships with my family and stuff like that. Like, you know, I could spend, you know, 3 hours of not quality time with my kids or one of my children, or I could spend 1 high impact, high quality hour with them. And I can do the same with fitness, and I could do the same with business. So really, you know, when you bring up the Scott example, that's just a little formula I run. I'm like, this sounds like a cool opportunity, but is it one of the biggest possible things I can do right now to make an impact? And even if it's a big thing, is it the biggest? Because I know I won't be able to do the biggest thing within PN and then also chase down this opportunity that Scott mentioned. So which one is bigger? Okay, well, I'm going to choose that one. And then I'm going to let Scott's thing walk away, as sad as it'll be. And I think I'm human and I feel the same things everyone else feels. So what you'll feel when you do this is, but wait, I have a bit more capacity. If I just, I watched Gary Vee's video recently and he told me how much I have to hustle. So maybe I need to just add this on and hustle. And the other thing you'll feel is, man, if I don't say yes to this, he's going to go to someone else. So one of my competitors is going to get the business. And this is going to sink my career. So you're going to feel all these crazy, fearful things like fear of missing out, fear of competition getting a leg up on you. But all of it is crap. All of it is crap. It's all a distraction from your most important things. And, you know, Pat, you talk about your ideal business, which actually means, you know, how do you build a business that dovetails with your whole life, the other things that are important to you too. And it's just, once PN started to grow, I realized if I didn't sit down and decide what's important to me, this thing would just take over my entire life. So, you know, I defined very clearly, you know, once we had our first child, you know, there are three things that I'm going to say yes to in this world for some point in time. It could possibly change, you know, and in no particular order, it's going to be to look after myself, my own health and fitness. I'm going to say yes to that, time spent on that. I'm going to say yes to my family, you know, being a good dad, being a good partner. And I'm going to say yes to things that grow precision nutrition. So those are the three things. Anything else is like necessarily a no. It makes decision making very simple. You know, you either are doing the things that are on this list or you're not. But it's not totally easy, because within any of those three things, you have to make choices on a regular basis too. So it's like kind of like going meta to micro. The meta thing is I only say yes to stuff that's related to, you know, having quality time with my family, taking care of myself, and doing important things at PN. And then in any given week, I have to decide what the specifics of those are. So every Monday, I have to sit down and do the hard work of saying, here's all the things that have been presented to me. Which will I do? Which will make the biggest impact this week and into the future of PN or the future of my family or whatever? And it's not easy work. Some Mondays, I just don't want to do it because it's hard. You know, you have to say no to things that you want to do, that you like doing, that you feel fearful of saying no to. But to me, fortunately, I'm in this position where lots of opportunities come my way. If I didn't do this, I'd be sunk. You know, my whole life would be governed by other people's priorities. And I'm sure I'd be depressed. I'm sure I'd be doing things that I'm not sure how they map to the larger goal of my life. And I'm sure that I would fail. I'm sure that I would not achieve big things that I can be proud of, because I'd just be doing a lot of little things that added up wouldn't actually move the needle towards my life's purpose. So that Scott example is a great one. And it really speaks to generally how I like to live. And there's a lot of popular business advice right now about saying no, you know, how to say no, why to say no. But I don't know that it really captures the essence. Like just saying no willy-nilly isn't useful. Just like saying yes to everything isn't useful either. It's about like sort of defining who you are, what you want out of life, what you want out of business, and then repeatedly doing the hard work of deciding or asking, does this thing fit into those? Is this the biggest, most important, most impactful thing that I can do now towards one of those things? And again, it's not easy. It's easier to say, just say no, or just say yes to everything. But this is, I think, the only way to live intentionally and create your ideal business or your ideal life.
So what's fun is, you know, I've been kind of talking about the whole concept of the ideal business for the better part of 2 years, and you just were far more eloquent in describing it than I've ever been. So that alone was great for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if that's true, but, you know, it's, I know it's something we both think a lot about. also think about how we can communicate it to others. You know, I mean, like, there's a lot of skin in the game here. Like, you know, if I'm making certain decisions, my wife wants to know why. You know what I mean? And I don't want to be like, oh, well, you couldn't possibly understand because I'm such an evolved, you know, lifestyle manager, thinker. You know, I have to be able to communicate it to her. And, you know, we have like 100 people at PN now. And I want to have to be able to communicate to them why I'm doing this and not that, and why their idea isn't getting priority over this idea over here. And so I have some skin in the game here. I have to be able to describe it, or else people just think I'm an obstinate ass, you know? So that's part of the thing, you know, but describing it to me is kind of the easy part. Like, actually living it is a practice. You know, I'm always interested. I watch your Facebook page, Pat, and, you know, there's like an equal amount of, you know, you at baseball as there is you teaching business lessons. That may not be for everyone, but it's really interesting to me because it's just a clear embodiment of what's your priority set, you know, and it's clear that you've thought about that and you've decided that. And that to me is like the most important thing for anyone listening in. If you don't, who will decide this for you? And if you want to decide, when will you sit down and think about these things and write them down and commit to them, like with your whole self? Because if you don't do that, then you won't have any guiding principles for this. For me, literally on my computer monitor, which I'm looking at right now, I've just got these posted as a reminder because I sometimes forget. You know, I've been living this way since the year before my daughter was born, so 7 years now, and I still forget. I forget what my priorities are some days. So I just post them right in front of my face like a dummy so that I get to be reminded. We often say at PM, what you want to do is record your commitments and your strategy generated in a moment of clarity so that when the moments aren't clear, you'll remember what clear thinking you came up with. You know what I mean? And I think that's so critical, you know, because you won't always be clear thinking. So write down what's important when you are, and then look back at it and go, oh, yeah, that's what clear thinking JB wants to do. I'm not him right now, so I'm going to take his advice, you know?
So I think this is a great segue because there was a term that you used when I was able to listen to your talk. And I felt like it was a better way to explain something that I talk a lot about with my clients and mastermind members and just in newsletters in general. You know, I've defined kind of setting rules and guidelines for myself. And you talked about the term guardrails, which I think is a much better visual and also kind of implies that if you're traveling down a road, you're heading to the desired destination. But, you know, do you mind talking a little bit about your own guardrails and how you use those to make decisions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. This is another practice that I have to be reminded of all the time, you know, but the idea is that I get to choose what the parameters are of my life. And so, for example, you know, recently, as when we had our third child, and I'll give you a couple examples, but when we had our third child, I started to notice that when we started having children, I had this vision of myself as like a teacher, a guide for the kids. And, you know, that would involve moments of just kind of one-on-one time together, teaching, learning, experiencing, exploring. And when we had our third child, I realized I have like zero moments of one-on-one time with the kids. And then I started to be sad about that and then be a little bit angry about that. And then I realized, well, wait a second. I'm the only one to blame. No one creates life for you. You create it. So I just said, all right, well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make time for one-on-one interactions and relationships with our kids. So, you know, I came up with a little experiment. I'm going to take Fridays off and I'll just, you know, take one child out of school for that day. So the first Friday of the month might be my daughter. The second might be our middle son. The third would be our youngest son. We've got another one on the way. So the fourth one will be for that one, you know, and we're just going to do stuff all day together, just one-on-one, you know, and that might be big stuff, like a little trip together. And it might be little stuff, just playing at the park or the early year center or, you know, reading or doing things, just quality time. And so that was one of my guardrails. I'm going to stop working every Friday, and I'm going to get one-on-one time with my children while they're young, while they want it, you know, while I want it. And that's just what I'm going to do. And now that sets up a new problem, right? Which is, well, how are you going to accomplish all the things you accomplish at work when you have 8 or whatever, 7 hours less a day to work? Once you set up the guardrails and they're non-negotiable, you have to figure that out, right? So that became a new challenge for me. It was like, here's my guardrails. You know, I also have a guardrail where I try not to work more than 7 hours a day. And that usually corresponds with the time from when the kids leave to when they get back from school. So it's like, okay, cool. Here's my family work guardrails. 7 hours a day, Monday through Thursday. I might put in a little bit of time on the weekend if I really need, if something came up or whatever, but generally not. And this is how I'm going to operate. So you can see this new challenge comes up of how are you going to do that? Like a, you know, aren't people putting in tremendous hours to have successful businesses? Well, they may be, but I have to ask the question, could you do it without all those hours? And the only way I've come up with is, you know, you can if you are ruthless in your prioritization of what you spend your time on. So because I have fewer hours, I don't have wiggle room. Once I get down to work Monday through Thursday from, you know, 8:30 till 2:30 or 3:30, whatever it is, I got to make things happen, you know, important things that move the needle either financially or that move the needle in terms of quality. So the interesting thing about the guardrails is at first it feels like a liability, right? Where you're like, oh man, I have less time than everyone else. I'm like -1 or -3 or -12 or however many minus you want to ascribe to that. It's a big liability. But I've learned quickly that it's actually an asset because when you have more time, you feel less pressure to get it right. You feel less pressure to work on the correct things. You know, Peter Drucker classically wrote about this in the book Effective Executive, where he talks about efficiency is trying to get a lot done in a given amount of time. Effectiveness is totally different. It lives on a different plane. Effectiveness is doing the right things in the first place. And you can get that intellectually. You can understand the difference. You will never experience the difference until you have restrictions on your time. Until you realize, whoa, okay, I only have 7 hours 4 days a week to get done. It has to be effective because if it's not, this is going to be a disaster. So I realized very quickly what I thought was a disadvantage became a real asset because now I only work on the things that make a difference. And oh, lo and behold, they end up making a difference, you know? So that's one of the guardrails. You know, another one was the whole formation of precision nutrition. You know, when we started back at the time, people who were successful in, let's say, strength and conditioning or education or certifications were doing it by globetrotting. You know, they were on the road 50 out of 52 weeks. And that was the model. Like, no one had seen any other type of success aside from that. They were doing seminars, you know, Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays, 3 in a city, you know, then to the next. And, you know, I looked at that and, you know, I thought there was some cool things about it. Like you get to be a world traveler and you get to meet a ton of people. But I realized it also wasn't for me. And this was when I was still single and didn't have a young family. I just don't have the constitution to do it, to travel so much, to speak that much. Like I'm naturally more introverted. I think 1 year I did 12 speaking engagements, and that killed me. Yeah, I wasn't able to recover from it. It was just so hard for me. Now, I'm sure I could get better with practice, but I just kind of sat down and I said, what if what I perceive as a liability, I'm not able to speak, travel the world, and get in front of audiences all the time, could become a strength for us? You know, what if we could do this online? And we were fortunate because PN was coming to be around the time when online was really taking off. But other people weren't rushing into this. So it's not a foregone conclusion. Like, well, of course, JB, you just got lucky because online was happening. Well, not everyone took advantage of this, you know, but the notion just being, what if we actually worked within our own unique abilities, you know, to create an awesome business on our own terms? And for me, that looked like doing education online. So, you know, we're pretty good at creating content and writing content, but then we started playing around with video. So I just built a little video studio in my house and we started recording educational videos right there. Like I had a teleprompter and I learned how to use that. And then I would run it myself. Like I'd go down there by myself, turn on the camera, get in front of the camera, run the prompter with my hand that was off camera and figure this out. And we quickly realized that what we thought was a liability became an asset, because now I could do a 12-minute video or a 30-minute video or whatever from my home or my studio and broadcast it to like 50,000 people. You know, if I was actually out in Sydney or London or Hamburg or wherever, I might have an audience of 100, 200, 300 people. I just did that thing and it went to 50,000. Wait a second, maybe not traveling is better. You know, people wouldn't have thought that at the time. So for me, it just becomes this particular exercise, and the two things have to fit together. One is, what are your unique abilities and what are your guardrails? Okay, make them work together. And then the second thing is always ask this question, right? Once I put up my guardrails, it actually limits my ability to do other stuff, right? So it keeps you in this one box of how you'll operate. But then you ask the question, but what if the box I'm operating in allowed me to do things bigger and better? You know, it might not, but what if it did? What would that look like? And that's been something that has been really helpful for us at PN. Obviously, you know, with the online education model, extremely helpful and extremely profitable. With my personal model, you know, with taking time off and working a more limited amount of hours in a week, it's been really helpful in terms of prioritizing the biggest possible things we can work on. So it's been great from that capacity. And it's just taught me so much, you know. And at actually the 212 event, I was telling someone that it feels like I have to be forced into these insights. You know what I mean? Just knowing them isn't enough. And this speaks back to what we talked about earlier. Learning stuff doesn't change behaviors. You know, I knew the difference between effectiveness and efficiency, but it took having a family to say, hey, you don't have a choice anymore, dude. So you either figure out a good way to do this or end up being what you don't want to be, a shitty dad, you know? And so that kind of, it's those moments in my life where I've been forced into putting up guardrails and constraints and then not being cool thinking of them as liabilities, but thinking of them as assets now. How can I make this an asset? That have really been game-changing, not only in how I operate and live in the world, but also in how we operate as a business. The only thing I always like to remind people is that this is a practice, and I don't always remember to do it, you know? So the next time a big liability comes up for me, I sometimes forget for a few minutes that I'm supposed to treat this as a guardrail that could create more opportunity for us. And then I'll, like, you know, whine like a toddler about it for a bit. And then eventually I'll be like, well, wait a second, I've solved this before so many times by doing the guardrail unique ability thing and then looking for your liability, whatever, to become your asset. You know, I often say that, you know, superpowers can also be your biggest kryptonite and vice versa. You know, your biggest challenge or problem could also become your biggest opportunity. And so I think it all fits together.
Awesome. So, you know, before we wrap up, you know, typically I'll ask people, hey, do you have any, I feel like you've already given us just so many valuable takeaways, but I wanted to make sure, you know, if there's any other lesson or insight or takeaway for somebody who's trying to go from having kind of a business that maybe is just getting by, or maybe it's not evolved to the point where they feel like it's where they would want it to be. You know, is there anything else that you would want to add or suggest?
Yeah, I mean, my first thing always is, it doesn't sound particularly hopeful, but it'll turn into hope in just a second if you hang with me. You know, the first is, you know, I talk to a lot of business owners, and the way that they speak sometimes, not everyone obviously, makes me wonder if they should be owning a business in the first place. You know, I'm sure you've seen this too, Pat, where you're like, this person would make a killer manager or killer head trainer or whatever. But as a business owner, I wish they'd just stop, you know? I wish they'd stop with that. And why do I say that? Well, I mean, skills can be built, right? So someone who doesn't have the skill to be a business owner is one thing. You can build that skill. The other thing is I just think aptitudes, you know? I think sometimes we get seduced by looking at what other people have accomplished and we start following their model of the world, their template. It might be glorified by other people, or there might just be something about it. Maybe it's that we don't have those skills or capabilities and we're just envious. For example, and this is unrelated to business, but a comedy, for example, is something I'm fascinated by. Like I'm not a naturally funny guy. You know, I don't have good comedic timing and stuff like that. So when I watch people who are good at comedy, I'm fascinated. It's like this superpower that they have that is like otherworldly to me. And there's a whole bunch of stuff like that in the world where I look at people who do this thing that I wasn't, you know, gifted with. And I'm sure they've practiced a lot too. But I go, wow, that's amazing, right? But if I tried to go in and do comedy with something that's like just I'm not good at, probably the best I'd ever be is just mediocre at it. You know, what I think I'd rather do is look at who I am and what I'm uniquely good at, and then like rush headlong into that, you know, get world class at that thing. So, you know, for people who are listening who might be business owners and they're not feeling great about their business, the first thing I would ask, and I know this is the most uncomfortable question, is should I be in business in the first place? Why am I even doing this? Now, your answer might be very powerful and profound, and it might drive you to continue. If so, do it. You know, then build the skills you need. But if the answer isn't, you know, if you can't find a good reason why you're in business, except for you thought that by having your own business, you'd be powerful and important and get to call your own shots and whatever, you know, and it's not turning out that way and you're not making any money at the same time and you're miserable, then maybe it's time to think about something else, you know. And all this speaks back to one thing that we do at PN that I think is so important, which is discovering your unique abilities. And for us, there's actually a process we go through with all of our team, and it started with Phil and I, of looking at, you know, a unique ability defined by us and who we learned from is what is the thing that you are or have the potential to be world class at, one. Two is, what is the thing that falls into that category that you actually like doing? Because there's some people who are world class at certain things that don't like it. So you have to have the potential or be very good. You have to like doing it. And then the third thing is it has to make a difference. It has to make an impact defined by whatever your key variables are. It could be money making. It could be changing the world in a positive way. It could be freeing up more time to spend with your family, whatever your metric is. So it's uniquely good at, could be world class, it really enjoy and has the potential to make a difference. And when you start spending more of your time in your unique ability set, a lot of things change. You know, each individual day feels, I won't say it's like this kind of utopian bliss because work is still hard, but you feel satisfied, you know? And I think, I don't know about you, Pat, but at the end of the day, if I feel satisfied, that was all I was really looking for. I didn't have to feel bliss or joy. Those are bonuses. Those are like delightful little surprises, you know? If I just feel satisfied, like I was at my desk 7 hours today and I feel satisfied with what was done, I realize that I don't feel satisfied if I'm working outside of my unique abilities, and I do when I'm working within them. And so that's kind of my parting, you know, thoughts for people listening who have businesses or want to start them. You know, it all starts with the old cliched advice of find your why. Why are you doing this in the first place? But I like to layer some tactics on it, which revolve around discovering your unique abilities. And then when you can make these things match, have a powerful why for doing what you do, and then make sure you're working within your unique abilities, and then I think things generally go pretty well, barring natural disaster. So it's hard work. I'm not going to pretend this is a quick fix for anyone. You know, oh yeah, just do this and your business will turn around. But that's my experience. I mean, people in fitness often laugh at clients for wanting a quick fix or magic bullet and then literally turn around and ask for that from a business coach. There's some irony to that. And when we become self-aware and mature, grow up a little bit, we realize that's what we're doing. And that just like clients, there has to be a process for our own development professionally. And so, you know, hopefully I've made some people think by talking about these things. They're not easy to think about. More importantly, help some people take some action. I remember at 212, I was doing a couple coaching sessions and I could see the person I was talking to literally just squirming in their chair. And then one of them kind of looked up while it was happening and he said, "I'm just feeling really, really uncomfortable right now by what you're telling me because I know it's right and I know it's going to be hard and it goes against some of my own programming. And I also know that this is where growth happens for me." And I was like, yes, that's it. This guy gets it, right? That's where growth happens. When you're squirming in your chair saying, "Ah, I don't want to believe this guy. Ah, it's uncomfortable. I'm going to have to do some things differently. I'm going to have to question assumptions that I've made. I may have to change everything about how I do things." But if you're not happy at, and not being successful by your metrics, that's the only way into this.
Well, you know, this was everything that I hoped it would be. And I am, I mean, especially knowing how you allocate your time and how you value your time, I'm honored and thrilled that you would make some time to share this because I know how powerful it is for me and I know how valuable it is for those listening in. So thank you, first and foremost.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for the platform. I mean, obviously, I think a lot about these things. You know, obviously, I like talking about them as well. So having the opportunity to share it with some people who are seeking this is a great honor for me as well.
So if somebody wants to learn more about you, more about PN and everything that you guys are doing to make such a profound impact, where can they go?
Yeah, I mean, well, if people want to just follow what I'm up to, they can come see me at my Dr. John Berardi Facebook page. I post on there a couple times a day. It's like my own personal mini blog, what I'm up to, what I'm thinking about, what's going on. So people can follow me there. And then obviously, if you're interested in what we do at Precision Nutrition, from, you know, coaching clients to certifying professionals to using our ProCoach tools, just come to precisionnutrition.com. And I like to make our podcast too pitchy. So either precisionnutrition.com or my Facebook page, and you can find out more.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I can't give PN a strong enough endorsement. I mean, you guys are the world leader in what you do. And hey, your private Facebook page, I almost have been compelled by an Apple Watch just based on that alone. Now,
it's funny because my new watch is sitting here, prompted me twice during our conversation to stand up because I got this like fitness-y kind of tracker thing where it tracks how much low intensity activity you've done, how much high and how much sitting to standing. So it keeps prompting me to stand and I'm like, dude, I'm on a podcast. Just give me a second here. It's been an interesting thing for listeners. I'm an advisor to Apple and they recently invited me out to a big unveiling of their Apple Watch, the second version. And I'm just not a jewelry guy. Like I don't even wear a wedding ring or anything like that. And at the end of this thing, they gave me a watch. And the irony was during the thing, so they were showing off the new watches. And I told someone next to me, like, yeah, I don't know though. Like someone even gave it to me. I'm not sure that I would wear it. You know, I just don't like jewelry. And I'm not sure what this watch thing is going to be so awesome to overcome that. So literally at the end of the event, they gave me a watch. And I'm like, oh man, now I'm going to either have to be true to my words or eat my words. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to just put it on because who knows, maybe they're tracking whether I wear it or not because they can track everything. And then they're going to be upset with me. So I'm going to wear it. And after 3 days, the thing's like a fixture now. It's pretty incredible, really, what's on my wrist right now. But hey, I don't want to make this a commercial for Apple. It's just kind of a funny thing that happened to me recently.
Well, hey, it worked, right? I mean, they got the guy who doesn't wear watches to wear a watch, and I'm talking about it on a podcast. So whatever their motive was, worked.
It completely worked. Absolutely.
Perfect. Well, John, thanks again, and be sure to check out John's Facebook page and Precision Nutrition. Thanks
Please
a lot
do.
For listening. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening. We've got a special gift for our listeners. We're giving away 52 cut and paste newsletters that you could start using for your fitness business today. To get your special gift, head on over to patrigsby.com/gift.